You're listening to Talk It Out, LGBTQ Voices in a Queer Election Year, presented by Gay City News and GayCityNews.com. I'm your host, Paul Schindler. Thank you for joining me for the ninth episode of Talk It Out. In one of our earlier episodes, I spoke to Leo Murrieta, director of Make the Road Action Nevada, a group building grassroots power among working class and immigrant communities across that state. In this episode, I return to the critical swing state of Nevada to speak with Andre Wade, the director of Silver State Equality, Nevada's LGBTQ civil rights organization. Andre talks about how his group, founded in 2019, created award-winning digital voter mobilization campaigns during the COVID shutdown in the 2020 election cycle, making use of platforms from Facebook and Instagram to Grindr. Silver State Equality achieved hundreds of thousands of digital impressions, particularly among gay and bisexual men. The group is building on that work with campaigns this year focused on lesbian and transgender Nevadans as well. Silver State Equality is also expanding its direct in-person contact with LGBTQ voters beyond the heavily populated Las Vegas metro area, into Reno, as well as throughout smaller communities across the state. Some of those communities confronting anti-LGBTQ backlash in schools, libraries, and other settings. We spoke before President Joe Biden's decision to step aside from his reelection bid, but Andre emphasized that regardless of who heads the ticket, his group's mission is to keep the focus on pro-equality policies prominent both in the Democratic presidential campaign and in the critical re-election bid by U.S. Senator Jackie Rosen. Andre expressed optimism that young voters in Nevada will be engaged this November, but he acknowledged that the challenge facing organizers is to meet those voters where they are. My guest is Andre Wade, the state director for Silver State Equality. Silver State Equality is Nevada's statewide LGBTQ plus civil rights organization. It works to elect pro-equality champions up and down the ballot. It works to pass pro-equality legislation. It advances LGBTQ civil rights and social justice in the courtroom, and works to reduce disparities in LGBTQ health and well-being. Welcome to the podcast, Andre.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
Andre, can you tell our listeners about the efforts Silver State Equality is engaged in terms of voter registration, voter mobilization, and getting out the LGBTQ plus and allied vote come this autumn?
As you mentioned, we're a statewide organization, and so we have staff members in Reno for the first time. We've had folks up north for, I think, about a year now. So it's a new outreach for us. And of course, I'm situated down south in Las Vegas. And so a lot of our voter engagement historically has been through digital advertisements because we got founded in 2019 as we're a program of Equality California. As you know, about 2020 election cycle was during the pandemic. And so a lot of our work was going to be digital anyway, but it became a requirement to be digital. So we use digital ads to reach hundreds of thousands of poor quality voters across the state. And these digital ads are award-winning because they are provocative and engaging and allow people to click through to get to our website that has information about the election and how to register to vote and those sorts of things. But we also table out in the community. So we go to different events in the community and we table and provide information to people about the election and the key dates. And even as things have changed in Nevada around same-day voter registration, vote by mail, automatic voter registration, those sorts of things, we've been able to educate people as much as we can within the LGBTQ plus community. And so those are some of the tactics that we're continuing this year. And we also send out text messages to our members and voters. And we hope to this cycle not only do mailers across the state and key districts, but also do some phone banking. So we try to tackle all the general programmatic areas, but we really lean on our digital ads and work in that space.
So when you talk about LGBTQ plus allies in the digital space, is that an algorithm that helps identify those folks?
Yeah, we work with the vendor that really handles the placement of those ads. So they have their own way that they do to try to target different voters. So we sometimes segment lists and we give to them based on, let's say, age or demographics within the state. And then they do their magic to get the ads in front of people on Facebook, Instagram, and Grindr as well.
Right. You talk about provocative award-winning ads. Can you give us an example of something that really captured a lot of attention?
Yes. So initially, the ads have been targeted towards gay, bisexual men who have sex with men. And we're trying to be more diverse in our ads, to be more geared towards women, trans folks. And so they're just men who are with their shirts off, and they have these messages like, what keeps me going is people who vote, or if you want to date me, show me your I voted sticker, something like that. And
right.
Really nice racy ads that are piques people's interest and want them, that allows them to click on it to find out more information. And so we've been able to see the metrics on the back end, see that the impression rate, click-through rates are just really astronomical, sort of outside of the norm.
Right. And because you're narrow casting in, for example, the Grindr platform, you know you're reaching the right people with those ads.
Exactly. And so this go round, we're aiming to go to platforms where trans folks and lesbians are as well.
Do you spend time on your digital ads focusing on reaching different demographic groups? And there I'm thinking about racial groups, ethnic groups, and so forth. Are you able to do that through the digital process?
The vendor is able to do so. We try to target Black and brown folks as much as we can. And in some of the work we do, Spanish speaking folks. So there is some intentionality in that area as well.
Right, because you have a significant Hispanic community in the state, and you also have a good sized Black community in the state.
A decent size, yes.
Do you work with national LGBTQ groups on your efforts? I'm thinking of the Human Rights Campaign. I'm thinking of National Black Justice Coalition, the task force. Do you work with them, and what kinds of efforts do you join hands with them on?
Yeah, it's a good question. We work with the task force around the census. We work with the task force on that project. And HRC, they have a state director in Nevada. And so we work closely with them on a lot of different issues, but including the general election. And so as you or the election cycle. And so you might be aware that they have a really robust base of volunteers and supporters that they're able to mobilize. And us being a newer organization in the state, our base isn't as big as theirs. And so we partner with them to help educate and mobilize voters. So yes, we definitely partner with some national organizations, including the Equality Federation.
I spoke to a group in Georgia that focused a lot of attention on the census, and they viewed the census as the beginning step in building community. They identified people through the census, and then they were able to do follow-up. Was the census work something that you're able to build on in terms of knowing who to do outreach to?
No, but we're getting there. Meaning there isn't great data on individual households that have LGBTQ plus folks. So there are census data for same-sex couples that we're
right.
able to rely on. And so what we hope to do through the redistricting process, which the census is tied to, is do work to identify areas where there is a large number of LGBTQ plus people concentrated in an area. So anecdotally, we have a sense of a couple of areas here in Southern Nevada to target, but we have nothing concrete to point to. And so as we gear up for the census, you know, years from now and redistricting, we will hopefully be poised to be able to identify some of these areas, same as what California has been able to do with their work. which will then give us some data to help with our overall advocacy and outreach and mobilization efforts.
I know that the bulk of the population in Nevada lives in the Las Vegas, Clark County area. I think 2/3, 70%, something like that. What opportunities do you have, and what difficulties are posed by trying to reach out to LGBTQ plus folks in smaller communities in rural areas in Nevada?
Yeah, that's a huge concern. As you mentioned, there's about 70% of the population here in Southern Nevada, let's say 15-20% in Northern Nevada. And then we have our rural and frontier areas where thousands of people live, including LGBTQ plus people. But we do know is that these folks do a lot of their organizing and communications online and through online channels. And they're not as out and open in their communities as we are in urban areas. Even though Nevada has been named one of the best places to live for LGBTQ plus people because of our policies and what's happening in some of the local jurisdictions, we know that that's not necessarily true for folks in the rural and frontier areas. And so HRC does a decent amount of work going into the rural areas. We hope to start doing a little bit more. As an example, we've supported quite a few different prides in Gerlach and Pahrump and in Carson City, smaller cities where they have these small pride festivals. And that gives us a chance to reach out to folks and build community. And it's been really exciting to see how many people are there and even just how many people are supportive, and we haven't run into any issues. And what I will say anecdotally, I heard a story about a rural community, and you know, often we think that they are anti-LGBTQ plus and not welcoming and inclusive. And someone had mentioned that they knew of a queer kid in their small rural area, and the community just really claims them as their own. And like, they support that queer kid. They may not have the same welcoming inclusive mentality for a lot of other people who are queer, but for that person in their community, that they're really supportive. And so that's, you know, good to hear. There's some opportunity there. And that's what we want at the end of the day, is for young people in these rural areas to feel supportive. And so if that one person is feeling that way, we have hope that that's happening to other young people. But, you know, there's also the alternate reality as well.
We've heard a lot about backlash around the country, particularly towards transgender folks, transgender youth. And some of that backlash, at least from my perspective, has spilled out into overall hostility or backlash against the LGBTQ plus community as a whole. Do you see much of that in Nevada? Is that a concern that you guys deal with?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of it. Started to really see a lot of it before the last election cycle. So about the end of 2021. You know, the equality movement has been one of the most successful civil rights movements in the United States in modern times. And so we made a lot of progress. And we started to maybe rest on our laurels a little bit, the larger we. And as we were kind of being complacent and satisfied with, let's say, marriage equality, the conservative movement was figuring out ways to target the LGBTQ plus community and specifically the trans community around, you know, bathroom issues, sports issues. And now it's drag queen story hours in libraries or in public spaces. And it's the book banning or reclassification of books that are LGBTQ plus themed. And so we're seeing a lot of that in Nevada, particularly in Washoe County up north and Douglas County and some small counties like Pahrump in Southern Nevada and in Clark County as well. So we have the Moms for Liberty types that are kicking up dust at school board and library board meetings and running for school board and other offices. So we're definitely seeing it a lot more pronounced up north. And it's something that we're dealing with here in Nevada, just like other folks are dealing with in other states.
You have the bandwidth. You mentioned being a relatively new group. Do you have the bandwidth at this point to take folks on at the level of like a school board election? Is that something you're able to put your arms around?
It is, with supportive partners. So We are the only statewide organization doing this type of work. There are quite a few progressive organizations that have LGBTQ plus equality as part of their pillars. And of course, HRC has their state director here doing work as well. And so with these partnerships, we're able to push back. So we have our staff primarily doing the organizing up north to combat some of these school board meetings and library board meetings. And we have worked with other groups down south who've done a lot of work in Las Vegas to push back in Clark County specifically around some of these meetings. So we have some of the bandwidth, we need more. And that's when we rely on our, again, partners and even volunteers and other advocates to step up to the plate and help out.
You mentioned other allied groups. Do you get support from the broader progressive community in Nevada? I spoke a couple of weeks ago to Leo Murrieta over at Make the Road Action Nevada, a gay man, and he spoke a lot about LGBTQ issues there. Are you able to partner with groups like that effectively and fairly seamlessly?
Yeah, we are. And so we're thankful that a lot of these organizations like PLAN, Progressive Leadership Alliance of Nevada, has historically done work in the LGBTQ plus equality movement space for a couple of decades. Folks like Battleborn Progress and Silver State Voices are partners and like Make the Road. So we have a equality coalition that's been longstanding since about 2004 related to Prop 8 and some marriage ban issues happening in the state back then, where organization was done to get a coalition of LGBTQ plus people and allies to combat negative legislation and support positive legislation. And so different organizations throughout the decades have managed this equality coalition. And now Silver State Equality manages this coalition, which includes those progressive partners to help us do work during the legislative session and with some of these other issues that are happening during like the election cycle and whatnot.
Do you have any kind of metric or goals in terms of the number of contacts you make, whether those are digital impressions, whether those are direct contacts with voters or potential voters, in terms of your registration and get out the vote efforts?
Yeah, in the digital space, you know, it's a little nebulous, but the impressions and click-through rates are in the hundreds of thousands, sometimes million, as far as impressions goes. We reach hundreds of people throughout the year directly in the community and specifically at events that we put on that are, it might be about, let's say, HIV prevention, but we'll weave in election related and advocacy related information. And so we're able to reach a decent amount of people. We have about 50,000 people, a part of our membership list, and that we plan to grow. And so we're doing quite well for an entity that's been around just for about 5.5 years.
How much do you depend on volunteer support in your efforts? And how do you recruit volunteers?
Volunteer recruitment is something we have leaned into more in the past year as we've had more staff on board. And so it's as simple as having a pledge card when we are tabling and asking people if they want to volunteer and them saying yes, and then us adding them to our mailing list. But we also have a more targeted list of people who we are able to reach out to for very discreet needs and have a more personal touch instead of a mass email. And so we're hoping to grow that even more, specifically up north, since we have staff that's been up there for just about a year now. So as we make our presence more known in the community, we hope that people will be more engaged and supportive of our work and volunteer on our behalf as well.
What kinds of concerns are you hearing about from people, specifically concerns they have that they'd like to see addressed in the election this year?
People are concerned about anything from democracy to fascism to the threats to transgender health access and gender affirming care. And people are concerned about health and safety and hate crimes. And people are concerned about their general well-being around their mental health because we see these attacks on TV and political ads coming from elected officials, and it can have a negative impact. And research shows that young people in particular are negatively impacted by all of this. And so we try to do our best to do what we can to combat all of that.
Are young people in the LGBTQ community motivated to become engaged in the political process? For many of them, it would be the first time they would have an opportunity to vote. Is that something that they readily embrace?
I would say so. There are actually quite a few LGBTQ plus groups that have young people either by way of design and outreach, or that's specifically targeted towards young people. We have a student advisory council that does some advocacy work on the school space. And then there's, of course, the Young Democratic group that's around. And what we are finding out more and more is that we might have our talking points and agenda. We want young people to care about certain things in a certain way at a certain time, but they care about certain things a certain way on their own time. And we have to be able to meet them where they are. And so I think it's incorrect to think that young people aren't engaged and don't care, because they do. And so we have to make sure that we talk to them in a way that they can receive.
There has been a quiet conversation for a long time that burst out into the open a few weeks ago, concerns about the president's age. And there's obviously a very heated discussion going on in the Democratic Party about the president staying at the top of the ticket. Are you hearing from people out in the community that the president's age or the age of the two candidates is a primary concern of theirs?
Yeah, you know, you're hearing it everywhere, as you mentioned, but we have to be focused on the policies and not necessarily the people. And so we just want to make sure that we get elected poor quality candidates who are supportive of LGBTQ plus equality. And so that's what we are focused on. And yeah, we aren't immune to those conversations and hearing concerns from folks.
How much discussion or interest are you hearing about the U.S. Senate race there? You've got an incumbent Democrat, Jackie Rosen, running for a second term. She won pretty handily in 2018. Is that the kind of race that interests and motivates people?
We hope so. We think so. You know, she's doing well with raising a lot of money, and we need to help with name ID and keeping her in front of the community. So we hope that will motivate people to vote, because she is a poor quality candidate, and we want to make that clear to voters.
So when I spoke to Make the Road Action Nevada, my understanding from them was that Nevada has very strong voter access protections in your laws. Is that, first of all, is that your assessment of the state of voter access in the state?
Yes, it is. Yep.
I also recall from 2020, because your state takes a certain amount of time to count all the votes, there was a delay in finding out which way Nevada was going to go. And that spurred some agitation on the streets. There were protesters on the Republican side claiming that something nefarious was going on in Las Vegas, the same claims they were making in Philadelphia and Milwaukee and Detroit. Are you at all concerned as election time rolls around that there could be voter intimidation or intimidation of poll workers in Las Vegas or in Reno or throughout Nevada?
Yeah, there's a light concern in that, you know, that's why we have the election protection work that's being done, spearheaded by Silver State Voices, another organization. And so we will play our part with the election protection work. And so it was pretty bonkers last cycle. A lot of unnecessary meddling, if you will, in the election process and the vote counting process. And so we want to make sure that we can mitigate some of that. And we'll just play our part by volunteering to monitor polls or monitoring the vote counting, however we can be helpful.
Andre Wade, State Director of Silver State Equality, thank you for joining the podcast.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Andre Wade, Director of Silver State Equality. And thanks to all of you for joining us again this week. To learn more about Silver State Equality, visit silverstateequality.org or connect with the group on Facebook, Instagram, or X. For other resources about election organizing in Nevada, visit Make the Road Action Nevada at maketheroadaction.org/Nevada, or check the group out on Facebook, Instagram, or X. Andre also mentioned the work of PLAN, the Progressive Leadership Alliance of Nevada. That group's website is planevada.org, and the group can also be found on Facebook and X. Please join us for our next episode, and if you haven't done so already, subscribe now on Apple, Spotify, and other podcast platforms. Thank you.